The Making of the Modern Middle East, A Personal History. Jeremy Bowen, the international editor of the BBC, has been covering the Middle East since 1989 and is uniquely placed to explain its complex past and its troubled present. In The Making of the Middle East, in part blamed on his acclaimed podcast, Our Man in the Middle East, Jeremy takes us on a journey across the region and through its history. Delighted to say he's joining me live on the line now from the UK, Jeremy Bowen. Jeremy, good morning to you.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Good to have you with us. It is a region that has for millennia been the centre of conflict, of negotiation, and of bewilderment for those looking out from the inside. What were your first thoughts when, in 1989, touched down in the Middle East?
Well, I had to start pedaling quite hard, to be honest with you, because I had done a bit of it at university, but I was in no sense experienced. But, you know, first off in, you know, the world of news, you have to start off by being a good journalist, doing all the basics, and then try and build up some kind of knowledge. I actually wrote this book because over the years, a lot of people have said to me, is there just one book you can recommend which will give me an overall grounding in the region? I'm interested in it, but to be honest with you, I find it a bit off-putting. And you know, to be absolutely honest with you, I couldn't think of one, so I wrote it.
And the podcast itself, was that basically to try and explain in an ever-shifting sort of political sands situation that you have in the Middle East, you know, as soon as you put something down on, I was going to say on the page, but probably on the computer screen or on the blog, It is almost out of date. And you can't Twitter or you can't tweet what's going on in the Middle East with any sort of comprehensive look.
Actually, in a way, the fundamentals, in a sense, don't change that much, but there are an awful lot of events. So I think that the idea behind my book was that if you you read it, you'll see that once you understand some of the fundamentals about the way people relate to each other, the different conflicts, the connections between them, then it becomes a little less... It feels a bit less like a barrage of events, and you can start seeing some shape in it.
In a world where, you know, we are bombarded 24/7 by social media, by a tweet, by a black and white reaction, a good versus bad, how difficult is it to bring in the shades, if you like, when you're reporting? Because it is not a situation that is, you know, it's not a Hollywood blockbuster. It's not a good versus evil struggle.
You know, the world is in mostly shades of grey. And I don't think it's particularly helpful to start off with a good guy, bad guy point of view, though that is human nature. You know, it's not a Western. It's not Cowboys and Indians and John Wayne. But I think that, you know, as a journalist, the important thing is first off to try and find out what on earth is going on and then try and explain why it's happening. And that's always been what I've tried to do, and the only way to really do that is to go, I think the best way is to go and take a look for yourself. I mean, in this day and age, as you say, we're bombarded with information. You can get, in a sense, you can feel like you can get the world through your computer screen. Well, you can up to a point, but it's often other people's interpretations of the world. And from the point of view of a newsman working for a large organization like the BBC that's worldwide, the way to do it is to get on a plane and go there.
When you look at a situation and when you talk to the people of the Middle East, and that's an all-encompassing and completely incorrect term, I suppose you could call it, but how much, because we're not talking about differences that started a year ago, a decade ago, we're talking about cultural differences and points of view that are being reinforced through centuries.
Yeah, if you look about, you know, there's been a lot, rightly, of emphasis on differences between Shia and Sunni Muslims, in particularly since the invasion of Iraq by the US and the British and their allies in 2003, which really sharpened a lot of that. But actually, that division goes back to a succession contest after the death of the Prophet Muhammad, you know, 1400 years ago. You know, it goes back a long way. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict started with the first, there were always Jews in the Middle East, but when Zionist Jews started immigrating from Europe in the end of the 19th century, the seeds of that conflict were sown. And in fact, you know, the British, when Britain was in charge of Palestine between 1917 and 1948, we did a lot to make things worse.
And I was talking about sort of the people of the Middle East, but if you think about it, the countries and the powers that are affected by what happens in the Middle East, just for its neighbours, you know, so we're talking about Turkey, we're talking, I mean, Syria, that sort of sleeping giant, if you will, because people underestimate or before would write off Syria at their peril, Egypt, etc. And of course we have, you know, Jordan, Israel, etc., etc. I mean, the ripples that come out of that particular area have an impact, especially on its closest neighbours, and it is all part of a power struggle, you know, from Ankara, from Cairo, and from Damascus.
Well, it's a very connected region, as you say. You know, there are many connections between countries that run on different levels. You know, maybe religion, maybe politics, it may be family, it's cultural, and so that means that when there might be a problem in one area, it can be transmitted through this network of connections to another area. I mean, I'll give you an example. If there's tension between Iran and, say, there's a scenario where Israel might decide that it's so concerned about Iran's nuclear plans that it decides to bomb the nuclear sites that the Iranians have inside Iran. Well, Iran has a very close alliance with the militia political group Hezbollah, which is in Lebanon. And Lebanon is, of course, on the border with Israel. And so if they attacked Iran in Iran, there's a strong chance that Hezbollah would attack Israel from just over the border. Connections, that's how they work.
And of course, at the center of all this, we have Jerusalem, which is a fascinating, if you like, focal point, because Jerusalem has been fought over, disputed, contested again for centuries.
Yes, Israel captured it from the old city of Jerusalem. Israel captured from Jordan in 1967, and the commanding general of the Israeli forces in that area at the time calculated that it was, I think, the 37th time that possession of the city had changed hands violently. You know, that is something. It's a very ancient city, but that's an awful lot of different people controlling it. The Israelis, of course, say that they'll be there forever, that it's their eternal capital. But a lot of the previous incumbents said that too. So the thing about Jerusalem is that Jerusalem endures, but the ownership of it has changed many times over the years. And as well as that, in a sense, it's a sort of living, breathing microcosm of the conflict particularly between Arabs and Jews, because the holy sites there, it's, you know, the holiest sites for Christians, the holiest sites for Jews, and the third holiest site after Mecca and Medina for Muslims, are right on top of each other, literally in some cases. And so that means that it's, you know, tensions there are never ending. It's a fascinating city. I lived there for 5 years, but it can be very tense. It can get violent, and there's an awful lot of hatred.
And it hits people on an emotive level, mainly because of those reasons that you said before, being the religious sites. And we saw the previous administration in the US saying that they wanted to move the embassy to Jerusalem.
Well, they did, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so it hit, and I was talking about, you know, the ripples that happen, the ripples, as if there are any ripples in the Middle East, but the ripples that happen in the Middle East have a knock-on effect globally.
Well, here's an example. If you, you know, say you're on the European coast of the Mediterranean and you look out, if you could look out beyond the horizon, you'd see the coast of North Africa, you'd see the coast of the Middle East, effectively. And particularly in 2015, that became very apparent with the flows of refugees, which continue, though not quite at that sort of pitch. But no, we are in Europe, we are very close to that part of the world, and we neglect it at our peril.
It's interesting you bring up that point. I'm based in a radio station in southern Spain. If I was to stand on my desk and look across, I can see the Mediterranean, Gibraltar, and the coast of Morocco. And those, you can see the Rif Mountains from where I am. And that has an effect, you know, that does have an effect, and those policies are, because we are, if you like, Mediterranean, we're Mediterranean nations. When you come to write about the modern Middle East, is it perhaps best to look at individual, the more personal stories, to give an insight before you go on a global perspective?
What I try to do in the book is discuss some, you know, personal experiences and anecdotes and people I've met, not because it might be a good story, but because hopefully they are good stories, but because they then reflect on the bigger issues and give you a handle, a way in to talking about the stuff which at first glance might seem a little bit more difficult, but it's not really. I mean, the whole point about this book is I've tried to write it in a way that's user-friendly, that is not intimidating or off-putting, that hopefully somebody who knows an awful lot about the region will get something out of it, but equally, it's fully comprehensible to someone who is interested but hasn't had the, you know, the personal experience or had a chance to study it and would like to know more. It's really for people who'd like to know more, who'd like to decode what's going on in a really important part of the world that has a daily impact on our lives.
Every time we hear about the Middle East, it tends to be about negative news. Now, I'm not saying that we should say it's you know, it's Good News Week, for example, but it's, yeah, as I said, it's not black or white. But can we take positives about the situation in the Middle East? I mean, despite, you know, the death of journalists recently over in that region, and, you know, we always seem to see another burial, another coffin, another rocket attack, another missile strike, are there, to use the parlance of a previous government, the green shoots of recovery in the Middle East, or is that dumbing it down too much?
Not at all. I mean, there are always people. There are remarkable people there. Compared to Europe, it's a really young population. 70%, 60-70% are under the age of 30. There, it's full of gifted people who've got an extraordinary history, who live in an amazing historic part of the world, who want to live better lives. But what stops those green shoots, and they are all green shoots, those people, and the things that they might try and do, what stops it happening is this long-term crisis of governance, corruption, authoritarianism, foreign intervention, which doesn't make things better. You know, when the foreigners have intervened, it generally makes things worse, not better. And as a result of that, they are thwarted in what they would like to do to make their countries and their lives better, because the power and the wealth of their countries is generally concentrated in very few hands. And many countries have worked out that the only way they can control their populations is by having these appalling secret police networks.
If there is a favorite memory to take out of your time in Jerusalem and the Middle East, what would it be?
Well, you know, for me, an awful lot of it revolves around, first of all, the extraordinary experiences of going to these amazing places. You know, places in Syria, the old city of Damascus, Aleppo, before it was badly bombed, even, you know, it's going to recover eventually when the war ends there. Jerusalem is an amazing city. There are incredible cities and places, Petra. You know, it's an extraordinary place. It's a real privilege to be able to visit. And I've met some amazing people. And, you know, as someone who's very interested in food, I love eating the food. And I went through a phase of putting quite a lot of pictures of street food in places like Syria on social media, and some people were having a go at me and saying, look, there are people starving to death in that country. Why on earth are you showing pictures of, you know, fantastically delicious things you can buy on the street? And I said, well, look, for starters, people are extraordinarily proud of their own culture, of which the things they eat is a big part of it. say, in Syria. They're amazingly proud of their cuisine. And also, I think it's important to fully reflect a country to not just show how they die, but show how they live. And that's, you know, if you work in mostly in television news as I do, but also on radio and in on our BBC website, inevitably we tend to concentrate a bit on the negative, because that is the nature of news. New things, often bad things. But I have in, you know, the wider context, things like social media, try to share these pictures that show it is a quite a variegated place. I mean, I've had some of the greatest experiences of my life in the region. I wouldn't change any of that.
The book is called The Making of the Modern Middle East, A Personal History. It's by Jeremy Bowen, who we're speaking to today. Jeremy, you mentioned social media. They can download the podcast from where? And where can they follow you for street food and so much more on the socials?
Well, I'm at Bowen BBC on Twitter. I am, I think I'm called at Jeremy Bowen on Instagram. I'm not quite sure, something like that. And yeah, my podcast is on BBC Sounds, and the book is available on all good bookshops and websites, and on Audible. If you want to hear me read it, I recorded it to read it out. It took 5 days.
What was that like, by the way? Was that you've had some grueling assignments? But was that quite
really grueling? I mean, the book, you know, if you read out an average radio news script, it's probably 180 words. If you read out a longer read, like we have at the BBC, from our own correspondent, it's about 800 words. The book is about 130,000 words. So think about it. It's a real challenge, actually, a different kind of challenge. And one of the big challenges is not losing your voice.
Well, it's been great for you to be joining us today. The book is called The Making of the Modern Middle East, A Personal History. It's by Jeremy, who will be speaking to you today, Jeremy Bowen. Jeremy, thank you so much for your time today.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you for asking me. Much appreciated.